Yes, it is. 1 week from today, the Chiefs will have their first preseason game of the year at the Superdome against the New Orleans Saints. Hi, everyone. I'm Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs, along with the 15-year-long snapper of the Steelers, Saints, and Chiefs, Kendall Gammon. Welcome to the place where Jesse James ended and the Pony Express began. St. Joseph, Missouri, when the coward Bob Ford shot Jesse James in the back.
I've got nothing to add. You've got all the history taken care of, so we're going to have to go to football, I guess.
Well, let's get to football. And today the Chiefs were on the field in pads again. Your overall impression of this day, because we're going to get started on what they did in the red zone. And this is an area where you and I have talked about it ad nauseum, where the Chiefs have been the worst team in the league now 2 years in a row. From the 20-yard line on in, what about today's work in there?
Well, you're right. First of all, the red zone makes all the difference in the world. We talked about it in the last episode in terms of the last 2 minutes of the first half and the last 2 minutes of the game. But the red zone also throughout the game, both offensively and defensively. As you talked about, throughout this camp, the defense has been a little bit ahead. And I think with the attacking style of defense they have, that you might expect that a little bit. But the offense put a few wrinkles in and did some nice things today. Had a very spirited session, a lot of success. I credit that a lot to number 11 and Alex Smith, and the fact of, folks, right now, this is a pitcher who can win the Cy Young. This is a guy who's spotting his pitches all over the place. Crossing routes, he's hitting them in stride. If a defensive back's on him, he's throwing the ball right out in front of the guy. I mean, you can have good coverage on the receivers, and he's doing the right things. You talked about it. You watch as much film as anybody in the world, and what you noticed was the extension of plays as well.
Yeah, he's going to extend some plays and pressure, but I want to ask you about the adjustments you're seeing from the rest of Alex Smith's teammates, and what did you see today where you saw some guys maybe to adjust that led to successful plays that wouldn't have been successful a week ago, a month ago, or for sure a year ago?
Well, you know what? I'm not sure if you're alluding to this, but I think in terms of being able to go down and get some balls that are thrown down low where that's the only spot they can be thrown, because Alex, like I said, he's not going to put balls up to where if they get tipped, they're going to get intercepted. It's ball security, ball security, ball security. So you see Dwayne Bowe go down and get a catch. You see some breaks on maybe a post pattern where Alex has released the ball before the break. And it's things like that, anticipating. It's not he's open and now I throw. It's he's about to be open, so I throw. And while the ball's in the air, he comes open, he catches it in stride, and he goes. I thought the pass protection was good. That being said, Dontari Poe continues to impress. But overall, a good session by the offense today.
You were part of 15 NFL training camps, and we're going to hear from Chiefs offensive coordinator Doug Peterson in a second. But it is a study in ambivalence, I guess. Yesterday, the defense, aggressive, dominates. You feel great about him, but you're going, wait a minute, what about the offense? Now today, the offense comes back in the red zone. How do you handle that if you're Andy Reid, where it's so competitive during camp, and yet how do you keep it from being divisive?
You know what? I've had many coaches talk to me about this, or the team rather, and they're like, listen, you know, we're trying to help make each other better. I mean, the Chiefs aren't playing the Chiefs. You guys are helping each other. So it's a game out there. You can't help but be competitive out there, but you've got to understand what you're trying to get to. When you talked about the defense being successful in the last couple of days, you know, bringing a lot of pressure, like we talked about, always trying to get a 4-on-3, I think, where you have one guy unaccounted for. So I think the offense is like, okay, guys, this is how we would combat that. Now maybe we jet people out to the right or the left, and you start moving the QB a little bit on purpose, or he starts to extend the plays like we talked about, and now you buy that extra half second. And when you do buy that extra half second, that makes a big difference for the receivers as well.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, these guys, the receivers, they're figuring out that if they do what they do consistently and being precise, specifically in the red zone, good things will happen, because the quarterback knows what he's doing, where he's going, not just with the ball, but with his feet.
You're exactly right again, because you know, Coach Reid has talked about it. This offense requires the QB to make quick decisions, be very decisive, and get the ball into the hands of the playmakers on time so they can make a play. And right now, that's what he's doing. And that comes from, really, quite honestly, a QB being completely on his game and understanding things from the minute he goes into the huddle to where he gets to the line of scrimmage. And you'll see, I mean, it's not Peyton Manning, but you see a lot of hand gestures, a lot of nonverbal communication. You've got a lot of stuff going on. And quite honestly, what that is, Mitch, and you know this, is he's telling receivers, what to do to a degree if he's noticing coverages. Lots of time he's going to go up there, and if he sees something, all of a sudden one side of the field may be shut down and he's going to the other side. So I think he's being given a lot of latitude and a lot of options, rather, and that's what you want.
It wasn't just Alex Smith getting reps today. Chase Daniel got some reps in the red zone. And from what I was able to observe, how much improved was he today? Did he play with some confidence in the red zone?
I thought he did play with a lot of confidence, Mitch. You're right there also. And I like him. He just steps up into the pocket. He delivers the ball much quicker than you might think for somebody of his stature. The size thing to me doesn't affect him at all. He's good at looking through the windows and finding the guys. But he's got a complete command of the offense and what's going on as well. And then the fact you see him run some option plays as well, and that's something that he can be pretty successful at, quite honestly.
Well, it was a red zone kind of day for the Kansas City Chiefs offense, exciting them to see them get to the end zone and not just settle for field goals. Offensive coordinator Doug Peterson talked about that and where this offense is as we head in now to the dog days of this camp.
Yeah, you know, too, we did red zone today, which is obviously a new set of plays for us, and presented some opportunities for offense to make those plays down the red zone. It was good to see.
When you have a day like you had yesterday, you get disappointed, you get frustrated, how do you
You don't. It's a training camp day. Offense is going to win a day. They're going to lose a day. Defense is going to. It's just the way training camp is set up, and these guys are working extremely hard. And we had a lot of good film, a lot of good teaching film from yesterday, and the guys responded nicely today. Between quarterback and receiver, tight end, there's some timing. It takes time. You just don't come out and start completing passes and being accurate. It takes time to develop that relationship and that bond with those guys, and you saw a little bit of that today, and we'll just keep that going. I think he did come here with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He's our guy, and we're going to war with him. He's come in here and he's led this football team, you know, on and off the football field. And he's studied, he's prepared himself, and he's improving every day.
We appreciate your feedback, and we're going to get to some of your questions later in the show, specifically as it pertains to running backs. Some of you have asked about Nile Davis on Twitter. And so we're going to get into that, and also just some more about this offense. But another big part of this offense, it's been apparent if you've watched this team, is the role of the tight ends. Now, what about the skill set of these tight ends that you've seen? I'm curious your thoughts of Moyaki. We're going to hear from Fasano here in a little bit, but Kelsey as well. And I'll throw in Brock and Demetrius Harris. What are you seeing from those five guys?
Well, I'll bring up Moyaki because, as you talked about it, we get questions all the time on Twitter, and I got some just today about Moyaki. I think this is a guy who looks very strong and healthy. We know health has been an issue in the past, but I think he's doing some good things. He has the speed to get down the middle. He has good hands. He's made one of the most spectacular catches I've ever seen his rookie year. So he has that ability. And if he can stay healthy, he figures to be a big part of the package because while he's not the overwhelming mauling blocker, he can do it good enough, and that's all you need from the tight end if he can do some other things in the pass game. Now, Kelsey, you talked about this guy. You coined it, and you couldn't coin it any better, which is, where's Waldo? You're going to move him around all over the place because he, folks, is a mismatch. He is a mismatch for everybody he goes against because he's borderline got wide receiver speed, but he's a big guy. He catches the ball out away from his hands. You got to love that. So he is a big part of it, and I think he can block very well also. And then you've got Fasano, who comes over from Miami. I think he's kind of the hybrid. He's the guy who's probably, of the three, is the better blocker, but he can get out and motor, and he can catch the ball as well. And I'm going to tell you right now, tight ends in this league are a commodity to be valued. They always go down. You want to have as many as you can because for whatever reason, my 15 years, you always had issues with tight ends. I think it's because they're blocking, they're catching, they're doing so many different things, Mitch. But I like what I'm seeing from the tight end position.
Well, Fasano is interesting. He has had his best games at Arrowhead Stadium as a Dolphin. Five touchdowns, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, at Arrowhead Stadium as a Dolphin. He's got 24 in his career. He started, of course, with the Dallas Cowboys, where he played originally for Bill Parcells. But Fasano, the Chiefs targeted him right away because they, to your point, they wanted as many tight ends and good tight ends as they could find. So they went out and got Fasano. But for Fasano, he had to make a big decision, too. And he decided on Kansas City, largely in part, to Arrowhead Stadium.
Yeah, it is. I think around the league, people know about Arrowhead and its fans and its franchise and tradition. So, you know, it's definitely something that was a positive when making my choice to come here.
What do you remember about that day?
It was cold. But it's definitely an intimidating place to come play. You know, it was a tough game, and, you know, it was a big win for my old team. But, you know, I'm happy to be on the other side of the sidelines.
One more thing for me.
I think we have a great group. All of us, you know, Tom Elvin's doing a great job kind of figuring out our roles. And, you know, we're still learning each other and learning the quarterbacks. So this is the time of year to do that. But I think our group looks promising.
As a Parcells guy, first of all, what does that mean, and what was he in your career?
It's an honor to have that label that you just said. But, you know, I played for him as a rookie. He taught me a lot of football in a small amount of time. You know, if ever I had a football concern or even a life concern, I wouldn't hesitate to pick up the phone and call him. So, you know, he's taught me a lot, and, you know, I respect the hell out of him.
Well, it is Hall of Fame weekend. In fact, there'll be football Sunday as a future Chiefs opponent. The Cowboys will take the Dolphins on and some Chiefs connections. First of all, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that the founder of the Kansas City Chiefs, the late Lamar Hunt, would have been 81 today. And, of course, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. Curly Culp, former Chief, former Houston Oiler, gets inducted this weekend into the Hall of Fame. Here's the list of others, and you're well acquainted with some of these guys.
Yeah, I've played against Sapp. I was in the league when Carter was in as well. And, of course, we all know Parcells. I guess Allen also. So, yeah, that's some of my era. I don't expect to see my name in there anytime soon. However, maybe if I get to the editing booth.
Well, we could do that, or we could start a campaign right here to put the snapper in. You might be behind Otis Taylor in that regard from Chiefs fans, but, hey, it just never hurts to put it out there. But, again, this is Hall of Fame weekend, and Curly Culp, part of those massive defenses the Chiefs had back in the glory days of the 60s and then went on to Houston and then finished up with the Detroit Lions. But Lenny Dawson, our broadcast partner, and, of course, another Pro Football Hall of Famer, talked about Curly Culp a lot. He said, I liked it a whole lot better when he was on the Chiefs than he was at the Houston Oilers, but a dominant player. What about the whole Canton, Ohio experience? Because later on, we might even take you on your own tour of Canton. But this weekend, Canton, Ohio, the Hall of Fame, the reverence that it has, as a player in this league for 15 years, what does it mean to you?
You know what, it's surreal to me when I go there. I played in a couple Hall of Fame games, and then I've been there to tour the place, and you just see so much of the history of the game and where it started to where it's come now. It's just, it almost leaves you speechless. And then when you go into the room that has all the busts and the lights on them, you just look at those folks, and it is amazing. You know, in my 15-year career, we talked about it off air, you know, I've played with a lot of Hall of Famers. I need to go back and count them, but those are some special people. When you get recognized to that degree, you've definitely done something good in your career.
It is a fabulous place, and need to put it on your bucket list to make it to Canton, Ohio at one time or another. And I'm excited if we get to play in that Hall of Fame game again. It's been a while since the Chiefs have been in it, played the Packers there several years back, but I just remember the experience. It was awesome, and hopefully this weekend the Chiefs will be in that game again, maybe in the upcoming years. One of the questions that came in tonight from you is the fact that maybe it goes back to the offense-defense thing, in that the defense has looked good, but is that a product? And we've kind of addressed that a little bit with the offense. But I'll ask you a little bit about the defensive line, because we're going to hear from Mike DeVito a little bit. I think both of us are seeing improvement, in some areas, vast improvement on the defensive line. What about that for this defense as a whole, where it wants to get to, and are you indeed seeing some improvement there?
Seeing a lot of improvement, Mitch, and you're right when you say that. And the one guy I talked about a little bit earlier is number 92, Dontari Poe. And he is giving our offensive line a problem, and quite honestly, he's going to give all offensive lines a problem. This is a guy who has gotten better from his first year to the second. He's taken his weight down a little bit. It might be hard to believe, when you see him, because he's such a massive person. But he seems now as fluid as ever, using his hands, and again, that 6'3", 340-pound frame, that is a guy who makes a difference. And again, with Bob Sutton's attacking style of defense, if you tell him somewhere to go, I have a hard time believing there's very many people that can keep him from getting there. So good things from him, and that helps the defensive ends to the rush, and when it helps the defensive ends, that helps the linebackers, and when you have a better rush, that helps the secondary, which has been vastly improved this year. So it's amazing, even if he's not making a sack, if he collapses the pocket, if he just creates havoc in the backfield, that can make a difference from top to bottom on defense.
I want to ask you about a play today. It was during that red zone session, but he schooled John Asamoah on a play. I tweeted out yesterday that Rodney Hudson going against Poe every day, it's that iron sharpening iron, but what does that do for Rodney Hudson? So let me rephrase this another way. What does it do for these offensive linemen to go against him every day? Because there's times he can embarrass you, can he not?
He can, and you have to look at it in the way of, okay, it's like Len. I'm glad that guy's on my team because at least I don't have to play him on Sundays. But, again, if you're working on that day in, day out, now when you get to the game, very rarely are you going to see a guy like that at that time. So the game actually may slow down for you a little bit. The one thing I like from him, again, is how he's using his hands. And you talked about where he got into Asamoah today, and we watched that. And Asamoah took the right steps. I mean, he was one-on-one on an island with him because the line was sliding to the left side. The tackle to his right was going out there. So he was one-on-one. That's going to be a tall task for somebody this year, whoever's playing the Chiefs. So that's good for him because it makes him have to work on those things. But, again, he's going to do that to a lot of people.
One of the more understated guys on this team is a player that's going to help this Kansas City Chiefs team in 2013. He has been a very productive, consistent player for the New York Jets over the last several years. The number that pops off the board when talking about Mike DeVito is 6 forced fumbles. Mike was able to address folks here today in St. Joe, and he talked about Poe, but he also talks about this D-line.
You know, I think the defense is doing a really good job. I think, you know, training camp, you're going to have a lot of back and forths. We're out here to make each other better. I think there's a lot of great competition, even, you know, inside, things that are hard to see, you know, O-line, D-line, things like that. So I think it's been a really competitive, really tough camp, but it's building a great team, and it's exciting to see.
One of the weaknesses of this team has been defensive line the past couple of years. And Dontari Poe, from what we understand, is having a heck of a camp. Are you seeing that out of him as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really impressed with Dontari. I mean, just his athleticism. You know, all those things that you see him have, but also his ability to pick up the defense. His mental game is also very good. I mean, he's able to read backfield sets, read his keys, understand the defense, and that allows him to play at the high level that he's playing at. You know, if he's sitting around thinking, he's not going to be able to play at that level. But he knows what's going on. He acts like a true vet. You would never know he was a second-year player. So I think we've seen a big jump from him from last year.
Mike DeVito, what are you seeing there?
Love it. He's just bringing his lunch pail to work, and he's going to go to work every day. I'll tell you, you talked about those forced fumbles, and what I see out of practice with him is he's getting into his man. He does a good job. But, Mitch, when the ball goes away from him, he takes pursuit angles. I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a running back and you decide to cut back and the defense hasn't been cut and you got somebody like him coming to pop you, that's when the ball, folks, comes loose. Or if the ball comes loose by somebody else and he's on a pursuit angle, he's getting the ball. You heard Bob Sutton talk about it. He needs this being done every single day because if you don't do it in practice, you're not going to do it in a game. And, again, the familiarity that he has, having been in New York with Coach Bob Sutton. So this is a guy that's good for the defense, and he's good for the locker room, quite honestly.
Well, when we come back, we're going to go to the other side of this equation. That is holding on to the football. What about the running backs and the fullbacks? And there is some heated battles going on that side. Plus, we'll deal with more of your questions when we come back on this edition of Chiefs Live from St. Joe.
This is a dorm room, but it's not an ordinary dorm room. Here, the lights are on at sunrise, and they're off at dark, because at this school, the last thing you want to do is fail. This is Chiefs training camp at Missouri Western State University. Classes are now in session.
Again, it's on here in St. Joe. A lot of work today by this team, and they'll go tomorrow. It is Family Fun Day here at the stadium. But again, it's a morning practice, just like all the others have been for the most part, except Sands 1. So about an 8:15 start here in St. Joe if you're planning on spending your Saturday with us. And Sunday will be the same. And schedule to be in pads. Why not? Just
love it.
Keep it coming. Well, we're going to talk about the running backs now and the battles that are going on there. There are eight in this camp, three fullbacks and five running backs overall. And let's take a look now. Here's your crew. Let's take a look at the running backs first. And everybody knows about Jamaal Charles. What about his running back mates?
You know what? That's going to be interesting. I saw number 34, Nile Davis, take a lot of reps today with the ones. I think that's a good sign. I think you've got to have somebody, obviously, to take away some of the, I would say carries, but I'm going to say some of the touches, because you're going to have a lot of touches in the passing game as well. But it's definitely a battle. You've got Nile, you've got Sean Drone, and then you've got Cyrus Gray, who's been out for a little while, and obviously can't make the team if you're not on the field. So you've got a lot of things going on there. It's going to come down to the preseason games. You want to see what they're doing in the game. And as we watch some guys catching passes right now, that's going to be a lot of it also. How do you catch the ball out of the backfield? Because that's going to happen a lot in this offense.
Let's look at Andy Reid's history here a little bit. His time in Philadelphia as head coach. Yeah, he had Brian Westbrook, who exploded as a receiver and was confident enough being a runner. But he always used several different running backs. I mean, people know about Jamaal Charles, and a lot of you have asked, and even tonight, about Jamaal. Who's going to back up Jamaal, and what about Jamaal's touches? I just don't see it as an issue. I know that they're going to manage his touches, aren't they? And that's where Nile Davis and whomever wins that third running back position enters into the discussion. But I want to ask you, what have you seen about Jamaal Charles as a receiver in catching the ball? And he had a touchdown today.
You know what? He's done some good things. You know, I'm not going to lie. He's put a few balls on the ground. And when he does that, the coaches are there, right there on him, as they should be. But it's a little bit of a nuance that's not been used as much in his career. So I think it's something to get used to. I think he's going to be fine. I think you're going to see all kinds of things. He may be the other Where's Waldo, because you can, quite honestly, you can split him out as a wide receiver and do some pretty interesting things there. And what that does, quite honestly, is it puts indecision on the defense in terms of where people are going to be. So I don't know. I think in overall, he's matured as a player, and he knows that, again, it's not about the carries. It's about the touches, and a lot of those touches are going to be that glorified handoff, which is the short pass.
Yeah, but those glorified handoff plays, there's some design to them. Mm-hmm. That make those bigger than your just normal glorified handoff play. The battle. I want to ask you about the battle here that looms. Cyrus Gray's missed the last several practices because of a foot injury. Sean Drone came out of nowhere last year, basically. What do you see in that battle?
You know what? Sean has proven that he can do it at a high level last year, did some good things, and he's been very productive on the special teams, which makes a difference. Now, Nile Davis, I had a chance to walk up the hill after practice a couple days ago with him, and just a great person. Enjoyed chatting with him. Asked him, what's different from college to this game? Is there anything? He naturally mentioned, he talked about the terminology, but then he also talked about the pass protection in terms of, in college, he didn't have to scan. And folks, when we talk about scanning, as a lineman, oftentimes, when you're uncovered, you may scan and you may look at a linebacker, maybe you right here, and then my producer over here, who's the defensive end, I may have to go here. And if you don't come, I've got to get back over here. Well, as a running back, you've got to do that also sometimes in pass protection, going from maybe the middle backer to an outside backer. So he spoke about that, said that was something he hadn't had to deal with before, but he was doing a good job. He felt like he was getting the plays down. He complimented Coach Bieniemy, said he was tough, but he was fair. Of course, he played the game, and that's always nice as a running back when you know that guy's played the game. So all in all, I like what I saw from him. At 5'10", 230 pounds, Mitch, we've seen what he can do at Arkansas. And if he can stay healthy and if the ball stays in his hands, and for all accounts it has, this is a guy who has a chance, in my opinion, to be a steal.
And the number that makes you SMH shaking my head is the fact that he can pop a 4.37 40 and did at 227 pounds. That does get your attention.
Yes.
Jordan Roberts is the other one. He's an interesting story. He didn't go to Charleston Southern. And he didn't go to College of Charleston. He went to the University of Charleston, Division II football in West Virginia, where he set an all-time record. I think he had 190 yards and a quarter in a game. So he'll be interesting to watch, but he's that fifth running back. Now, and you mentioned Bieniemy. I want to ask you about him because I've watched him chew on every one of these guys as it deals with pass protections. And to be honest, they've missed some.
Right.
But Bieniemy, you talk about him and his ability to coach. But what about him teaching protections to these running backs?
Well, I mean, he's done it before, like we talked about. But he knows what they want. You know, that's been communicated from Coach Reed to the offensive coordinator to him. So, you know, it's what Niall was talking about. Is he's very demanding in what's going on. But the fact is, in this game, as a running back, if you're a great runner and you can't pass protect, there's a good chance you might not get on the field. Case in point, I'm watching Jamaal Charles. He's in some drills. They do lots of drills before they get to team early on in the first part of practice where it's just one-on-one with the running back and the linebacker. And sometimes they'll go out for pass, but sometimes they'll have to come up and they'll have to try to stone that linebacker. And that is tough duty. You're not going to be very successful one-on-one in those drills, but it gets you used to knowing what you have to do. So, again, you have to get your assignment first because if you don't know who to block, it's going to be bad. But after that, you've got to have your technique down and be ready because you know what? They brought number 11 here for a reason because they feel like he can do some good things, but they've got to take care of him also.
Yeah, that's one of the most unfun drills for the running backs to block a linebacker. He's just steaming in on the best ever in Chiefs history, though, at Jack and the linebacker back, Tony Richardson.
Yes.
Every linebacker says, I got a rock in my shoe. Why don't you go? Now, that segues into the three fullbacks in this camp, and this is a heated battle. Let's put the graphic back up to kind of show you our collage of running backs, if you will, and this gives you the three that are there. All right, let's start with Anthony Sherman. The Chiefs trade Javier Arenas to Arizona to get Sherman. What have you seen in Sherman?
You know what? He does a good job. When I watch him, he finds the bubble backer, and he goes and gets him. I like when he's blocking. I've noticed that he gets his head on the proper side, which if you're running to the right, he gets the head on the outside of that guy, so he has to go through him, doing some good things. You just saw him catch the ball as well. And you see a lot of misdirection plays where the fullback goes like he's going to block a linebacker. Then, whoops, I just went right by you, and then the ball's right there. And, by the way, right when I said whoops, the ball came out of the hand. It's in the air before he's open. So you've got 11 doing some good things, delivering it. But I like how he is and the fact of, in Arizona, he was a special teams fiend as well. He'll help on special teams here. Certainly, he is the front runner, and he's doing a good job.
I've noticed fullbacks in this offense are like tight ends. What if you can block but you can't catch passes, probably need not apply. If you just catch passes and you don't want to block, move on down the road.
Yeah, we'd prefer that you just be able to do everything.
So that leads us into the two rookies that are battling for a spot because I could see this team keeping two fullbacks. I seriously could because all three of these guys, you've talked about Sherman playing special teams. These other two guys can as well. Braden Wilson, here we go. Known the kid since second grade, I think. He's from my hometown of Smith Center, Kansas. Read the book, Our Boys, New York Times bestseller, about the remarkable little town that's produced 15 Division I football players, including this guy. What do you see in him? He had the hamstring problem. He missed three practices. What about Braden Wilson?
You know what? He did miss those, which is not good, but he came back. I watched him today. I felt like there was no ill effects from that he was doing okay. I mean, everyone around here has seen him when he played with K-State. This guy is tough as nails. If you ask him to run through a brick wall, he's going to do that. He does some good things. I think his versatility can help him. He's going to have to perform on special teams, like you said. He's the size of guy that you could put on that wing also and do some things, even tied in to a degree. I know he's not going to play there, and I'm not suggesting that he is, but he's got some versatility from that standpoint. I would say of the three, he may be the least agile, and I'm not getting down on him because he does a great job, but of the three, he may be the least agile. So it will be interesting. You know, with a sixth-round pick, you kind of took a chance on him a little bit, but it's worth it to see because this is a guy, some things you just can't measure. And as you know, the Smith Center boys, they've got it going on.
Well, let's see. Mark Seminole played in the league for 10 years and won a world championship. So, yeah, they can do it. The other guy in this battle, to me, is very intriguing. In fact, I've been impressed with him so far to open this camp. But let's put it back up our screen here and take a look here at Tobin Opperum. This is a guy that played, he started now as a running back at Kansas. He was recruited out of Texas to be a running back. Then they flipped him over to the outside linebacker slash defensive end position where he was very good for the Jayhawks. Now the Chiefs have decided to put him back to fullback, but I've seen some instinct in this guy. What are you seeing in Tobin Opperum, and can he win that second fullback job?
Well, what you talked about is the fact is he was recruited to play running back, and he did, but in moving to defensive end slash linebacker, it tells me that this is a guy who's very, very athletic. Tells me that this is a guy who's very, very unselfish. He's just going to do whatever he's asked to do by his coaches to help the team win. I think as far as his versatility and agility, having been a linebacker also, I think that's going to bode well for him on the special teams side of the ball. I think he needs to be a four-core guy if he's going to make this team, and I think he does have a real shot. But that second fullback, if there is a second fullback, that is definitely one of the big battles for camp.
Kansas put together a nice YouTube piece on him if you want to Google him, because he came from Nigeria. His family's from Nigeria. He had a heart murmur issue. His parents did not want him to play high school football in Richardson, Texas, so he told his parents he was the manager of the team. Whoops! He was playing for the team, became a star, and so the rest is history. But it'll be very interesting to watch the battle there with the fullbacks and running backs. But overall as a group, let's put all eight of those guys together. What's your comfort level in those guys?
I've got a big comfort level. I know we know 25 is going to do a great job. I'm comfortable with 42 as your fullback if that ends up that way. And wherever they go with the backups, I think we have very adequate backups that can do a good job. And in the NFL, if you're a backup, you're only one play away. You need to be to the level that you could go in and you could play for a stretch of either plays and or games until somebody else got back. And I like the makeup that we have.
Well, to wrap things up, one more question we're going to take from you out there, and that has to deal with Sanders Cummings. Weird injury. Before this team was in pads, it was just the rookies, the injured vets coming back, and the quarterbacks. That was it. Nobody's in pads, and all of a sudden we get word that he's got a broken collarbone. And a blow, quite honestly, because I'm excited about Sanders
right.
Cummings. But people are saying maybe he goes to IR. What are you hearing? What are you thinking about Sanders Cummings?
I don't see him going to IR, Mitch. You and I talked about this. This is a guy that just has too much upside. I mean, I believe he'll be here. I think he'll come back from that. I just think it's simply delayed things for 4 to 6 weeks. This is a guy who can play safety. He can play corner. He could come up and play that hybrid backer in the dime formation. I think he'll be a terror on special teams. I think he brings too much to the table, and this is a guy that will be around here in some way, shape, or form, in my opinion.
And an interesting guy. He could have played Major League Baseball. He was drafted by the Diamondbacks, decided to go to the University of Georgia, and now he's here. And hopefully we'll get him out of the infirmary and get him on the field soon. But, again, tomorrow's Family Fun Day. If you're within the environs of St. Joe or want to make the drive, we'll get things started early here tomorrow. Again, just after 8 o'clock, they'll be in pads again. But really, one of the highlights of camp is always Family Fun Day. But I talked about it being the dog. Final question for you, kind of the dog days of camp. Now, we're a week from playing the New Orleans Saints. It's been over a week since all 90 have been here. The rookies have been here and the quarterbacks have been here 2 weeks. What about the grind now, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday? What is that like and how do you get through it?
You know, it's funny you bring this up because I was just, when I was driving up here today, and I just thought about it, how, man, the game's only a week away. But I remember when I played for 15 years, and something was a week away. It just seemed like eternity, because I'm going to tell you right now, when you're practicing every day in pads and you're going after it like they are, it does seem like that light, it's around the bend and you can't see it. But it is at the end of the tunnel, and you want that. You need to get to a preseason game because you need to start hitting other people. You need to understand how your skills are coming along. You want to see how groups play against other groups who don't kind of know what's going on because they've been going against you day in, day out. It's huge. Preseason games, normally, you know, they're a little bit tempered down, but I think in this instance, in this camp, with the first-year head coach Andy Reid here, for us, I think it's big, and I think it's going to be interesting.
Well, it's also a little bit of a challenge for the 65 TPT crew as we grind on getting ready for that New Orleans game because we have to deal with each other, too, and it's really a physiological issue. The the different smells of camp that you get. So, yeah, we're getting well acquainted too, but we're ready to go to New Orleans. But for Kendall Gammon, join us here tomorrow if you're within range. Of course, we will bring Chiefs Live to you tomorrow night, even though it's the weekend. But it is Family Fun Day, so we'll see you here in St. Joe. For Kendall Gammon, I'm Mitch Holtis. Thanks for joining us.